Riverdale After Dark, a podcast about the CW's Riverdale that loves, just loves, killing dogs. I'm Alex.
Oh, come on.
When you're a long-haul trucker, there's only one thing you have on your mind after hour 16 on the road, and that's tipping some drinks and singing along to some dancing teenagers or early 20s, if nothing else. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Chapter 89, Reservoir Dogs. And in case you couldn't hear it, Pete is already cracking that beer because he can't take it.
I can't take it.
Alex and I do these like character intros in voice, and your character intro is cracking a beer.
That really gets to the core of Pete's character. Now, for this episode, this is coming right off of the Hiram focused episode, which is a very focused, very character focused flashback episode. Right back into it with Riverdale.
Turn it up to 11.
You know, I'll tell you what, like, there was a lot of fun stuff in this episode. It definitely was like, at the halfway point, it did a check-in of, okay, where are we with these plots, right? So Veronica and Reggie are off doing whatever they're doing with stocks. I barely understand what's happening.
Sexual tension is what they're doing.
Stop it.
Yeah, yes. The market. That was a bull market, if you know what I mean. Yeah, I actually don't know what I mean.
I don't think you know.
Archie is off with some dog fighting thing. Betty is fighting truckers. Jughead, not even there.
Not a character.
Cheryl was starting cult, arguably a cult. I think we'll get into that.
Yeah.
So lots going on. Classic Riverdale in this episode.
Classic.
I did want to give a shout out first to a member of the staff here. Gabriel Coria.
We don't have a staff.
Shout
out to the staff. Shout out to Paul on drums. Shout out to Steve, our producer. Shout out to Johnny. All male staff, by the way. All male.
We have
no
all
women.
Male. Come on. That's rich.
Sorry.
Keep progressive.
Put in a Sheila.
Gabriel Coria, who directed this episode, has directed a ton of Riverdale episodes. Guy knows his way around a camera. This was a really, really good looking episode with a bunch of really nice shots in it. That's all. What? I just wanted to mention that before I forgot. What? The director of the episode. I thought it was really nice looking.
Okay.
I think it was, too, and especially in an episode that moved so quickly between stories, we still got to see some nice visuals, not only of the sort of more dynamic scenes like the dancing on the bar or the religious ceremony, a lot of singing, obviously, but even in the Veronica Reggie stuff, like, that was fun. That was really well laid out, and we got to see them really, like, being emotional, falling in like, if not love.
Stop.
Monica is strong. That's where the power is right now in this show.
There's definitely something going on there, and we'll get into
I want to give a shout out to the wardrobe department because, you know, those FBI, you can take away her gun and her badge, but you better take a bunch of FBI paraphernalia and really nice-looking jackets as well. Because the wardrobe
Glenn, we're jumping all over the place here, but Glenn did not ask for her jacket. He asked for her gun and her badge.
Extra jackets that she also rocks with.
Yeah, next time he's gonna ask for the jackets.
Anyway, give me the jackets, the hats, the sneakers, the sweatpants,
the socks.
The vehicle, the van and tank that has FBI painted in yellow on the side.
Yeah, you can keep the tote bag because that's fine. We want to advertise the FBI at the supermarket, so keep that. But the rest of the stuff.
And definitely the big rig truck that you requisitioned and somehow own now, we're going to want that back too.
So we want to get into the episode at the end, if there's time, and hopefully there'll be a little time. We got a bunch of questions and theories and comments on the episode from all of you folks out there on Twitter.
I also have a lot of questions.
Yes, you get your time, okay, Pete. Right, yeah. You'll definitely have your time.
I yield my time.
Sure, we have time for the nice folks that wrote in as well. So let's jump into it.
Well, one question real quick, just to put out there. Do you think that, did Betty zip car her big rig, or was it like a rental from...
real quick, do you think after they shot and edited the episode, they looked at each other and said, I don't know, Reservoir Dogs?
There's dogs in there.
There's
That's
dogs.
Why. And they're probably fighting in a reservoir. We didn't get to see that.
Oh, okay, the reservoir is where everyone's drinking water comes from.
Right. And at the end of the episode, if you look closely in
there was no
the
slow
kennel,
motion, like, walk sequence. No,
the dogs were wearing adorable little black and white suits. It was very cute.
Very cute.
Nobody
make a
wants
ton
to
of
be
sense.
Mr. Pink. Come on.
Mm-hmm. They and the dog, I mean, I hate to say it, but the dog was missing part of an ear, which is a classic phrase for our dogs thing as well. So,
oh, wow. That's the nod right there. Mm-hmm. I was looking for it. So thank you for pointing
it's,
that out.
Might I say, a deep cut.
Wow. I would say so.
Wow.
So we have a bunch of different trains running here. Again, in classic Riverdale fashion, we have a number of storylines that may or may not connect, depending on how you look at it. They certainly weave together, I think, a little more nicely than usual, just because people are actually referring to what's going on in the other storylines. I know that's a little move, but I kind of appreciated those things, even those things in the middle where Alice was like, Archie's off with his dog thing, whatever that is, so I'm going to be filling in for Fags over here.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it did, and it helps to just the little bit of, littlest bit of ligature between the different plot lines really helped a lot.
Yeah, it's
great,
I mean,
to see
sincerely,
Fangs.
Because I think that's something that people ask for a lot. Like, and there's a utility in not having those lines of those check-ins all the time. But the fact that there were little things like people name-checking Tony, even though she wasn't there, and her role in the show is much appreciated. So jumping into it, we got Archie at war. Jackson's leg has been blown off. Of course, it's a dream. There's a crash downstairs, and it turns out Eric Jackson has a gun. He attacks Archie, and then Uncle Frank...
Intense. But luckily,
down. Yes.
You have a jacked uncle who can choke out your friend for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, people wonder, like, why would you, you know, kind of be so close with a jacked uncle like that? And that's exactly right there.
Yeah, people are always wondering why you would be so close with a jacked uncle. That's one of the number one things I think about.
Where do you keep your jacked uncle? Like, in a separate house? Like a jacked uncle
house?
Yeah,
you gotta keep a separate house that, you take care of.
So should they have named, this is the big thing I was wondering out of the episode, should they have named Uncle Frank Uncle Jack?
Yeah.
Because he's so jacked.
Yeah. But he's also very frank. He doesn't pussyfoot around. Oh. He's very direct.
Yes. Wow. So the thing that I thought was interesting about this storyline in particular, we could kind of, honestly, I think, speed through it a little bit. There's a lot of stuff that happens, but it's essentially... Uncle Frank is like, Jackson is having some sort of trauma, PTSD from being at war. I'm going to get them a stray dog that I found next to a dumpster. The dog hides in a closet.
Sure, sure.
That's
sure,
a big
sure.
plot point at one point. Archie is still having these dreams. Archie reveals to Frank that it's because of Bingo, a dog that they lost at war, who died at war.
Oh, man.
Turns out, huge shocker at the end of the episode.
Because there's a lot of dogs at war. People don't know.
Yeah,
that.
No, everybody. Yeah.
The dogs of war.
That's dogs of war, yeah.
Sure, sure, sure.
So at the end of the episode, it turns out Bingo is a person.
His
and Bingo,
name
out. Yes, thank you.
Because it's a he.
Oh, my God. Wow. Pete would have had the answer to the mystery the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't understand, guys. Bingo was his name.
His name.
And Archie goes a little nuts, taking down the dog ring. Frank... ultimately sets up an adoption center at the El Royale dogs they got
great
for the dog
space.
Ring. Yes.
It's great. Finally, there's another business at
bring
the El Royale.
Bring a little sunshine into that place.
They are never going to get all the dog hair out of there. That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't really have pets, but I do know I moved into an apartment where there were cats, and there was cat hair the entire 2 years I was living there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also didn't clean.
I know. Also, you complain about that constantly, Alex. Mm-hmm. The cat hair. I'm allergic to cats. I'm dying. I have a hairball. I'm starting to use the litter box instead of a toilet.
I hate.
There's a cat clawing my face. Blah blah blah. That's
why
always
I buy
me.
All these cats.
Yeah,
we all
know. Great.
Pete is a real cat man. He has a lovely cat.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And the name of your cat, ironically, is Barchi, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. It's a lot longer than that. But anyways.
Yeah, so just to finish up the storyline, what happens is it turns out it's actually Archie's trauma, not Eric's trauma, that's going on there. And at the end of the episode, Archie, who's been trying to get in touch with the VA the entire time, gets a call from them in the middle of the night, maybe, or something like that.
It did feel unclear. Like a weird time for that call. I mean, mm-hmm. he was definitely sleeping.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And still dreaming of war and figuring out exactly what happened to him at war. He needs help as well, and he seems to see the ghost of Bingo. So that's in total. That's kind of rushing through it a little bit, but that's kind of what's going on with Archie's storyline. The thing that was a weird swerve to me is starting with Eric having the trauma, but then moving over to Archie's trauma. What did you think about that? What did you think about that turn?
Oh, go ahead, Justin.
No, you.
Oh, well, thanks. I think Riverdale is like, okay, what situation can we quickly handle poorly and just kind of move on to an insane another situation? Well, we could probably post-traumatic stress. Okay, check. We'll do that. You know, just like giant rings where people fight and kill dogs. Yep. Okay, great. It's really impressive how they're hitting everybody. Like, everybody gets it a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, whatever kind of like thing can go wrong, they're going to cover it.
Well, but here's the thing. They're not saying this issue, the PTSD isn't solved for mm-hmm. Archie or Jackson. Like, if anything, I think it's just this is a serious issue, both in real life. And I think it's a serious issue. It's treated seriously in this episode. It's just wild to cut in and out of this with like, we opened Coyote Ugly at the underneath the diner in town. So like, I think it's the juxtaposition that makes it feel like, are we taking this seriously? But I do think, like, we get into Archie's trauma. We see it from with his eyes. We see it from outside. We realize it's serious. And it's something, like, when he beats up the dude from the dogfighting ring, I was like, yo, dude, that's too much. And it's like, you're mad at him for being cruel to dogs. And then you, like, almost murder him. So it's the expression of it is there. It just feels weird next to, you know, the crazy stock market specifics that Reggie was showing.
I mean, I think to the point that you're making, Justin, the reason, and I hear what you're saying, Pete, like I'm there with you. Certainly while I was watching the episode, I was like, what's happening with the story? What's going on here exactly? But I think the face that they leave it, the fact that it is not solved, that it is ongoing, and it is something that we're very specifically based on the promo going to be dealing with in the next episode, even get further into this. The fact that they tie it back to Archie's overall anxiety about having to fix all of the entire town by himself, even though he's not. Everybody else is in on this plan. Everybody else is working for him. But you understand that weight on his shoulders of this is all up to me. Ultimately, I have this hero complex, and that's what he's trying to work through. I think it ultimately ended up in a place where it dealt really well, not just with the PTSD arc in this episode, but also Archie's character and growth in general, and also tied into, forgetting the first three episodes, you know, the time jump, if you look at that as the season premiere, the idea of this is a season that he has at war. He came back and he is in a new type of war here in Riverdale, and he doesn't know how to deal with what's going on in Riverdale because he hasn't properly processed what just happened to him.
And he's going to need help is what it.
Well, kudos to have him be like, hey, I put me also in there. I need help as well. Like for him to, you know, get that for himself is great.
And it's just a credit to the show that they're able to weave these plots together. I feel like there are just so few shows that could handle so much at one time. It truly is a big rig of a television show.
Let's talk about who's going to help him, because this has been a huge debate.
One last thing before we move on.
Before we start yelling at each other.
Yeah,
yes. Exactly. I think it's interesting. For the first dog, Archie's dog, Vegas, this dog's name is Bingo. A lot of gambling names. Mm-hmm. Wow. What's with all this gambling they're doing?
What's with all the dogs that died this episode? That was legitimately the saddest part of the episode, was they were like, oh yeah, Vegas died years ago. Yeah. Sorry.
Alex, dogs don't live forever. They when they go to a farm upstate, it's not the farm from Riverdale. They're not in a cult. They're
What about cats though? Because I lived in this apartment for 2 years and there was enough cat hair that I was able to build a cat of my own that could just kind of sat there, just like made out of cat. It didn't do much, but I think that's still alive.
It is. That cat lives inside of a briefcase where on one end of the briefcase oh is a food dish and on the other end of the briefcase is a litter box.
This is a horrible idea.
Speaking of which, what's going on with Toffee? Glenn, sorry to jump into this. Glenn and Betty had a whole conversation. Didn't mention Toffee
didn't
once.
Didn't bring up the cat one
didn't
time.
Bring up the cat.
One time. Oh, by the way.
Yeah. Betty, I'm going to need your gun and badge. Toffee is fine. I still have Toffee. Like, does that cost you anything?
How hard is that? How hard is that?
Glenn, is somebody charging you not to say this?
No, guys, Glenn is a mobile cat owner. His jacket, big flowy jacket. Yeah. He's got a bunch of litter in the bottom of his pockets. And Toffee's just living in his pocket.
Show us that then. Yeah. Put us at ease.
I'll show you.
Otherwise, don't have Glenn if you're not going to, give us Glenn.
No, what I was saying before about the dogs is I do think that because of the gambling themed dog names, I think eventually we're going to get to dogs playing poker as a main feature of the TV show Riverdale.
That's really beautiful.
I was hoping war, you know what I mean? But
they're playing war?
Yeah, yeah.
A little too close to home.
Right now? All right.
Wow. Let's get back to the point of who is going to help Archie, because again, big, big subject of debate online today, specifically because, and I'll just feed this right up to you, Justin, there were a bunch of scenes that people paralleled between what was going on with Betty this episode and what was going on with Archie, to the point of them both waking up in bed rather suddenly, immediately looking at their phones. And one big thing that I'll point to that maybe supposition, maybe a writer playing with us, who knows, but there was the shot of when Archie wakes up and he says he needs some help, there is light pouring in through his window. And as we all know, there was the big conversation about Archie being the light through Betty's window before they broke up from the Friends with Benefits thing. Evan Kyle, the writer of the episode, posted that shot and said something to the effect of, "Ooh boy, who's going to help Archie here? Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see." And Evan, as far as I know, is straight up openly a Archie stan. So,
yes,
I'm feeding it to you, but take it away.
The floor is yours. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. There, the way I feel like to really understand, to read the Riverdale tea leaves, you have to look at the macro, because you got Betty and Archie paralleling a little bit. Jughead, he's perpendicular. He's out of here. He's doing his. He's not even narrating anymore. So he's doing his own thing. And then you got another couple forming over here with Veronica and Reggie. Very much the way they were making eyes at each other.
Don't get sidetracked. He's asking about the specific thing. If you're not going to talk about that, I'm going to have to cut you off. Okay, so listen.
Okay, well, I just want to throw out as a Barchi stand from the very beginning of this podcast. 100% agree with you, Justin. Go ahead. Go ahead, Pete.
Okay, so
get out of here. You don't ever fight.
Sometimes what happened, guys, and Justin, I'm surprised you didn't jump on this since you're classically trained, and I assume you've been on sets and stuff like that. But what happens is sometimes in between stuff, there's like a cool moment on set. Somebody captures it. There's usually someone with a camera there. You know, so
a lot of cameras. Famously, a lot of cameras on set.
Right, exactly. That's my point. So you get a good shot, then you're showing it around the set, and then somebody's like, it'll be fun. Post that online, kind of maybe put some breadcrumbs on the ground. Don't fall for it. There's nothing going on next door. They tried Pete, it was hot for a bit. It's over.
Pete, I just want to say, as a Bughead stan, I completely agree with you, and I think we're following the wrong direction on all of these breadcrumbs.
You did try to jump on the Barchi stan wagon for quite some time, and I'll tell you what, Alex, the stan wagon is full. with the real heads.
Yeah. And let's see what happens. I will say this, that regardless of anything in any standing, if legitimately it was something in the script that was, we know their relationship is going to deepen, they're going to get closer towards the end of the season, it makes a lot of sense after Betty and Jughead hash out whatever is going on with them, which we know is coming down the road. They're going to have some sort of big conversation. If Betty and Archie then figure out a way to deal with their shared trauma, not even shared trauma, but the each individual trauma they have, whether it's romantic or not, that's a good place for the show to head in. But if they are legitimately presaging that with a light through the window, with these parallel scenes and everything, that's great. I love that. Like, I would love for that to happen.
All right. If you're going to keep bringing up the parallel scenes, I hate to break it to you guys, but if you put cameras in anybody's, like, houses, people get up in the morning, okay? So they're going to be people getting up at the same time all over the place. It happens all the time. So you kind of pointing that out is a thing.
Yeah, that is true. Now that Pete says it, I do remember that people wake up all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's going to be...
I stand up all night, all night long.
I do think, get to bed. Anyway, let's get back to the plot. So we talked about Archie's stuff. Let's move over to Tabitha and Betty, since we're starting to talk about Betty anyway.
Who knew that these guys were such a team?
Well, after you go, you do some drugs together, you have some fun, you know, you're going to be a little closer.
I'm going to throw something out here that may be a little controversial. So this storyline, great. Love Tabitha and Betty together. Very happy about it. I love them being friends. I love Tabitha working with other people that aren't just Jughead. I know we were worried that she would be segmented into that part of the show for a while, and it doesn't feel like she is.
Right, that's awesome.
This is frustrating for me a little bit, because this feels like the place that they were going with Tony at one point and then completely swerved away. So... that's all. It just, it reminded me of the fact that, like, Tony was starting to be the investigator with Betty, working with Betty, I think back in season 3 or something like
she's
that.
She's going to be back, man. Just be cool.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I would love to see that.
She's having a baby.
It just reminded me of that. Give her some time, would you please? It's fine. It's all fine. I'm fine with it. It's just,
Yeah, you seem fine.
You seem really upset. You're like, that could have been Tony. I'm really upset about it.
Alex, think about this. Maybe Tony's on the case and she's investigating the baby's involvement in this.
Tony's staring at the baby growing in her tum-tum. And is like, what's going on with you? What's your deal?
Well, she's, how are you connected?
Maybe Tony's masterminding a whole bunch of stuff we're not even realizing right now.
Because all you have to do to get to that baby is follow the umbilical cord. It leads every time to that baby.
Every time?
Tabitha and Betty's storyline, again, to kind of walk through that a little bit. So Tabitha repeatedly is begging Betty to be careful as she goes on the road, as she tracks down these truckers. Betty's like, yep, got it.
It's nerve-wracking every time she goes out there. I'm freaking, I've aged so much in this.
Well, I'll get back to something that I think, Justin, you mentioned a long time ago on this podcast, maybe last season, is that we don't see Jughead this episode, but Jughead and Betty without each other, Jughead doesn't know how to be creative. He has no inspiration. Yeah. And Betty is a rogue element. Like, she needs Jughead to hold her back for being a crazy person who is 100%. Getting in trucks with truckers. So I think that's a little bit of what's going on here.
That's an insane statement. Okay. Two individuals that can live their own lives, do their things. I agree with what's behind it, that they make each other better when they're together. And I think that's the important thing you're saying.
You just rather they
calling
be separate.
Calling them psychopaths on themselves, it's not really a good look for you. You should look at that a little bit.
Listen, Pete, speaking as a bughead, Stan, I feel like I have a right to say this on the podcast. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, fine.
I don't know how to deal with this now. Too confusing. Too confusing, and I'm talking to you. But Pete, I don't think it's saying they're both psychopaths, but they both need, they're both each other's stabilizing element, at least in the way that they acted before. I think that's true, especially in the past for Jughead. He messed up so bad that he had to get in a big rig truck with a perhaps killer to go back to New York to go deal with a hot dog situation that he never resolved.
Oh, man.
And Betty's cracking.
In his defense, I feel the same way, because I want to go back to New York because I realized I could have eaten more hot dogs. You know what I mean?
Nice. Did you see the news, though, that every hot dog you eat apparently takes 35 minutes off of your life. So that agent doesn't have a lot of time left. That's all I'm saying.
It also takes 35 minutes off your day, because you're going to need a hot dog after one of those bangers.
You got to get out the knife. You got to get out the fork. Really take your time with that hot dog.
And on the Betty side, I think she's a rogue element. She, like you said, Alex, she's ostensibly trying to track down where Polly is, who she thinks is alive but also thinks is dead. She mentioned Polly like once in this episode. She's obsessive about just like.
How many times did she gotta mention her for you?
Because I'm saying is, I think Betty is obsessed with putting herself in danger, because she's dealing with perhaps a trauma from the trash bag killer, or just from like life changing. Perhaps she's
she's going through a lot and she's trying to save her sister. What else is there?
Perhaps she's in love with like a close friend and trying to deal with that.
This is jumping all over the place, definitely, and I do want to get back to Tabitha and Betty because that is a big, fun, ridiculous storyline that happens in the episode. But just talking about the trauma of it all, we are talking about Betty and Archie both have this trauma in their past they need to deal with. That seems to be a major theme of the season. Jughead, we know, too. We're going to be dealing with that next episode. He went back to New York to really figure out what went on because he blocked it out of his memory. What about Veronica, though? Because we know her trauma point, I guess, is the helicopter crash, but we haven't really looped back to that at all in a while, right?
Well, she's trying to live her Wolf of Wall Street, and you're not going to, if you're, you know, kind of living that mindset, you're not going to stop and then, you know, you'll really look at your life and values at that point.
But I also think Veronica is the most aware of herself in that way. Like, I think she's able to process trauma like that and move on. Like, she is a little bit like Hiram. She, you know, you can't keep her down. She keeps moving. So I don't know. Of all of them, I feel like maybe she's the one that actually has sort of dealt with it and maybe doesn't need to deal with it anymore.
Well, she's also arguably, you know, when she's away from Archie, maybe, you know, not doing so well. You know, maybe she needs a little bit more.
Oh, really? You thought in this episode she wasn't doing well? She made, like, tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, lying to people. She doesn't have, she's taking people's money. She's fucking up somebody's life.
No. This is how money works, Pete, is you buy things that don't exist and then you get more money for them.
That's right. Just like me, money never sleeps. And I think we saw
a lot of people. That's not going to be good.
No. I don't think she has. I barely understand, and this is to 100% seriously respond to what you were just saying. I don't understand anything about money or stocks or investments or anything like that, but I do think she pretty clearly explains at the beginning that this is not a scam. What Hiram is doing is a scam, but she is creating essentially what all of stocks and all investment is you're investing to get more money on the money. Like, there doesn't need to be a product. It's just the company that you're investing in that's going to go upwards. So
you think she's taking that money and she's going to invest it wisely for those people?
Absolutely. That's exactly what she says. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
She has a great idea. She's going to open another club with more dancing below.
She did. She opened up a business. What was it called? Posh and Bubbles or whatever? Yeah. The two of them?
Pearl and Posh.
Pearls and Posh. Inside of her jewelry store. So she's running an entirely different business inside of her jewelry store. Classic Veronica.
Smart.
Yeah. Classic nesting egg of a business.
Exactly. Russian doll of business. It's just like when I tried to open a Gap inside of an Old Navy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tried to open up a Pizza Hut inside of a KFC and everybody told me I was bad.
And now it's the way things are done.
You gotta have a Taco Bell, otherwise, what are you doing?
I tried to open my own personal ball pit inside of a McDonald's play place, and boy, did I get beat up.
You can't really, with that background, you can't say I tried to open up anything.
Oh, you mean because I'm in a weird basement?
Yeah, because you're in a psychopath's
literal background, not like the background of, well, you know what happened with Justin's ball pit.
Please don't bring it up.
Let's get back to Betty and Tabitha. So they meet a trucker. It turns out to be an FBI agent, as we mentioned. Glenn is doing a sting.
I'm FBI. You can't be FBI. I'm FBI.
How much return do you think they were getting on that sting operation? A lot of very horny female truck drivers who are like soliciting and going after.
But Betty's right.
Not to be sexist or anything.
Not even a truck driver, but they're like, finally, we've arrested another woman randomly seducing truckers.
Yeah. Like Betty was right. She's like, what are you doing? You're going off to the wrong people. It was a good point.
That's 100%. But Betty, did you know that actually 80% of FBI cases are where they're just arresting other people also doing an FBI thing?
Yeah. It's a classic.
I believe that. I believe
standoff situation.
I thought it would be like FBI arresting CIA and just vice versa.
Yes. So I mean, I guess what they're actually doing is they're going after the prostitutes like Polly, who were prostituting themselves on the lonely highway. It just was a weird way of explicating that in terms of Buddy as also a trucker and also an FBI agent. So it was very funny.
Very funny. How about the line from Betty? I should have stabbed you harder when I had the chance.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
She's not doing it.
I don't know what you're saying. Betty's doing great, man. She's killing it.
And then Tabitha and Betty immediately come up with a Coyote Ugly inspired plan to lure the truckers to the
Reservoir Dogs. You get it. Reservoir Dogs.
Yes. I love this because they're like, how do we get truckers here? And they're like, oh, I know, an elaborate dance club. When I was like, lower the price of coffee 5 cents and every trucker will be there.
Yeah, and say free truckers drink for free coffee. Yeah.
Here's my question.
Open to the public. Every trucker is going to stop.
You're going to get truckers drunk is your idea? Then send them off in their truck? That's your plan?
This is a perennial question about Riverdale, and it's fine, and I don't actually want to know the answer to this, but when did they practice that number? Like, everybody is so busy doing so many other things. When did they all get together and practice that number to poison? You know?
I think they just know it. You know,
it's
they
just, in their bodies.
Just, yeah, okay, they're just like,
DNA.
Yeah.
Maybe during the seven-year time jump. We're going to go back. We're going to flash back to the seven-year time jump.
Yeah.
Guys, so much 20 numbers to rehearse.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why Jughead feels left out, because he's not a dancer. Everyone else was just did one full year of choreo.
Yeah.
So they do this Coyote Ugly plan while the truckers are distracted inside watching the hot girls dance. They're going to, who was it? It was Kevin and Reggie, right? Are looking in the trucks. They're going to take the license plates numbers. They find blood in one of the trucks, but it's just cow's blood, so it's no big deal. That was a very funny scene. And then at the end, Betty is walking out and sees a trucker who seems pretty sketchy. He's got some blood on his door handle. So she gets in with him, even though Tabitha once again is like, don't do anything
stupid. This is driving me crazy. I'm screaming at my fucking screen going, don't get in there. Who's your backup? You can't just text Tabitha. That isn't enough.
Apparently it was, because they pull over to the side of the road. The trucker, in fact, is seemingly going to kill her. He's got a knife.
He says, like, you know, oh, yeah. There's nothing better than watching the life come out of somebody's eyes.
Have you ever seen that, though? It is pretty cool. The throat. It's very cool.
What?
Yeah. I hang out at hospitals a lot, and I like to watch people die.
Oh, my God.
And it's nice.
You know, Riverdale is not as fucked up as you are. Do you realize what I just said out loud?
It's true. Yes, he's super, super creepy. He has a great chainsaw fight with her. Love the way this was shot. Love the way this all played out. Ultimately, she beats him with a wrench, and her decision is to not turn.
She straight up boomerangs that wrench.
Straight up, like, throws a strike, like, 90 miles an hour. Right in the,
so cool.
Just full on Last of the Mohicans, this random dude knocks him the fuck out. Oh, I was like, Betty, yes.
And she ultimately takes the decision to hold on to the trucker and interrogate him herself.
In quotes, interrogate him in this location, which we all know is the sex bunker. Like,
I mean, honestly, the location is her, apparently, like, I think it's her garage or something like that, based on the shots.
Well, no matter where it is, I was like, Tabitha's like, where do we take her? And, like, Betty's got a place. I'm like, it's going to be either her house or the sex bunker. Like, yeah, Tabitha should have been worm. Like, yeah.
It's a booth
or
that
below
pops.
The white worm. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So that's what's going on with this storyline. We can probably jump over to Veronica, since we touched on that. So Veronica and Reggie, as we mentioned, are working together to sell some stonks. They do really well. Reggie really wants to work with her. They ultimately end up, I feel like the point of this storyline, beyond moving Reggie and Veronica closer together, was also reveal, or at least double down on exactly what's going on with Hiram's plan for Sodal, which turns out to be nothing. There's nothing there, as I think we knew.
Yep.
Or I believe you mentioned at some point, they ultimately beat Hiram at his own game and start up a successful business. And then they're going to go back to it tomorrow. And that's pretty much it. But what do you think?
So
I mean,
dangerous.
Again, I feel like Varchies were like, nope, nothing going on there. And Veggies are like, game on. Where do you lie?
Like,
first
off, 100%
not even in the same frame. A lot of the time, they were just focusing on their job. It would look very professional.
Pete, get out of here. They were not in the same frame,
like,
because
hey,
they were making.
What do you want to do now? And she was like, "Fucking get your ass away from me." She was like, "Nah."
They spent a lot of the episode standing in that office, staring at each other, being like, "I'm so turned on right now by money and you, and let's do this." They were, I mean, there were so many shots of just Veronica being like, I like what's happening right now. I feel like it's so right there. Man, Monica is on its way.
I think so, too. I mean, that's kind of where I'm leading. Whether it'll stick around, we'll see. But I feel like this was a midway point where it was Reggie was evil. Last episode, we got Reggie's redemption story. Now he's back on. This episode was him winning himself back to the side of the good guys with Veronica. And then I didn't get any sparks from this episode, but I think we're going to see that going forward, particularly as Archie is off dealing with his own trauma. He's not necessarily going to be there to interact in a positive way with Veronica. And I think Reggie will.
Yeah. I mean, plus, the only thing I'll say about this is Reggie is an unbelievable salesman. He can sell you cars, stocks, makeup shit. That guy is, he is the closer. I give 100%. Him credit.
And the secret is having 8 clocks on the wall of your jewelry store office. I think we all know that. Yeah. But I also think this sets up an interesting dynamic that we perhaps didn't see coming. We always thought it was going to be Archie versus Chadwick. I think it might be Reggie versus Chadwick, ooh, which I think is a better matchup.
Oh, I like that.
I do like that.
Because they could get Reggie's going to pull some dirty tricks.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Reggie's going to whoop some ass. That's going to be awesome.
That's fun. I like that idea. Let's move over to the other storyline in the episode, which is Kevin and Cheryl. Now, Cheryl is full in on her mom's ministry, where, and this was kind of teased in a couple of interviews, I believe, but where Penelope is using it actually as a scam. Cheryl is into it. Like, she legitimately believes what's going on. She's finding spiritual healing through it.
Drink your own brother's blood. I mean, you know, things are going to get hazy.
Absolutely.
I mean, this first scene of Cheryl walking in the red cloak, I was like, it was one of the most beautiful shots in all of Riverdale. It was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. So the whole thing. I love the way they set that up as sort of a Red Riding Hood, Big Bad Wolf thing with Kevin. Awesome.
But that also brings up a good point. You know, maybe Riverdale is going to tackle, you know, the Jesus. That's what the light was coming through the window.
Tackle the Jesus. Oh, yeah. You think that was Jesus? You're saying
That's right.
You can't even accept Barchi to the point where you're like, that's Jesus walking in?
Listen, as a Barchi stan, I've already accepted Barchi as my Lord and Savior. So.
Wow. Wow. Hey, can't argue with that. My memory is 3 seconds long.
So the storyline, just very quickly, just overview of the storyline. So Kevin is having a hard time after his breakup with Fangs. He's gotten back to cruising in the woods. Yes.
What is the cruising scene like in Riverdale at this point? Someone needs to come in and organize it because it's too much deep woods wandering. Like, there should be a more specific, and like,
I don't know who would wander around Riverdale. Like,
particularly that road where he was, that didn't even look like the woods he's usually in, honestly. Yeah.
Exactly.
And who else is there? There's Fangs and Moose, and that's it. And we see them in an apartment in this episode, so they're not out cruising. So who's Kevin waiting for?
There's a lot of random truckers that come and go, as we know.
That's true.
How much trucking is going through Riverdale?
Tons.
There's certainly a lot. Yeah. And those truckers are ready to murder, fight, and drink.
They're like, oh, wow, this diner has a club behind it. Got to stop here for a while.
That's the power of the CB radio.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So this storyline, though, Kevin is dealing with his own trauma, which is a breakup with Fangs. He thinks he did a terrible thing. Cheryl is trying to get him into the ministry. He doesn't really like it at first, but does take her advice to apologize to Fangs. And that's where we get to see Quarantine / to your point, Pete, Jesus Moose. Straight up is there seemingly dating Fangs. They've got a baguette and maybe some sort of like olive oil dip or something like that. I don't know.
As Kevin says later, he caught them having wine and cheese. True decadence. I mean, what did you think about the fact that we have Moose has become Jason Moose Moa and is maybe headed toward being an Aquaman of some sort?
Yeah. I do love that they got Cody Kearsley mid-quarantine. He's like, I'm not going to cut my hair or whatever.
Yeah.
This is where I've been for the past year.
No, they probably saw him with that and was like, no, keep it.
It was fun. Right. I didn't recognize him at all until they said his name.
I was like, I don't know who this is. For a second, I thought it was Jason Momoa, but no, it was not. Do you think Kevin's breakup with Fangs was worse? Because he sort of says this was worse than the breakup with his own internal organs at the farm.
Yeah.
I mean, I think so. Like, it definitely hurt him more. He was pretty cool with having his kidney taken out.
Yeah, he never talked about that, you know?
And though, as somebody pointed out to me on Twitter today, there is a difference between the ministry and the way that Cheryl is treating it and a cult that Edgar Everett ever run, at least right now. We'll see, I guess, where it goes. But at the same time, it is very surprising to me. Yeah, that Kevin's like, yep, here we go.
I was like, you can't just keep doing this to Kevin, guys, right? You guys can't keep doing this to Kevin.
Kevin and Cheryl.
But I mean, Kevin had to walk in on Moose and Fangs. Like, oh.
Oh, that part, not him joining a cult part.
Well, and the him joining a cult after he's joined a cult and been in a farm and lost the organs.
He's joining this cult as the artistic director.
So it's a little more of a creative role.
That is the actual title he has. And they sing a well-done song from Jesus Christ Superstar.
How many artistic directors do you think churches have? Like, do you think that's a normal thing?
I love, though, that Cheryl's solution where he's like, I feel like I'm getting nowhere in my life. I wanted to be in New York. I wanted to be on Broadway. Instead, I'm teaching at the school. I was named Teacher of the Year. This is what my life is like. And Cheryl's like, you know what? I'm going to give you a worse job performing for prisoners. And he's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Because all the people in that church.
Mark, we get to do musicals? Yes, we do, Kev. I'll be there.
I'll take it.
Seeing them wear the Cheryl red, it was too much. I really feel poor Kevin.
I love Penelope in that scene, though. Just she is chugging so put
the
off.
Wine in the background, just like so funny. Chugging blood. Just she in
hates
the background.
It. Hates it so much. She's like, this was my scam, and they've made it into a real thing, and now I'm mad.
But what's a scam? She's trying to get like $8.50 from the collection plate that goes around?
$8.50 a day.
I don't know. And this church seems to have hours every day, all day. Who cares? Let's just pop over to the Blossom Mansion.
I think they
mansion.
Sleep in the pews and then they wake them up for service.
The one thing that I will also say about this storyline, though, and legitimately, I am actually a Shoney stan. This storyline.
Oh, you can't. Hey, boy who cried wolf. You can't. You can't throw your stands around and then come home and say like, "Oh, the boy who cried stan."
This storyline doubled down on the fact that Shoney is getting back together. 100%. There were so many mentions of Tony, Cheryl talking about her regrets. The advice she was giving was not just advice to Kevin. It was advice that she was giving to herself for Tony when Tony eventually returns. We're gonna see a conversation between them. I'm sure, given it's Riverdale, a million things will happen between now and then, and there might be some swerves, but I think ultimately the direction that we are heading in right now, as we've been speculating all season long, is Cheryl and Tony getting back together, or at least edging towards getting back together. I think that's the whole ministry thing here is about Cheryl getting back in the world legitimately, about healing, about dealing with her trauma. I'm curious to see how dark and weird it gets because, again, Riverdale, and that's sort of what happens. But that, to me, is where we are in the story right now. And this episode really seemed to drive that point home.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know, man. I think you're reaching a little bit, but I hear you. I hear you.
Let's run through and talk about any other big moments or points. One thing that I wanted to call out, we got to see Frank and Archie eating Cinnamon Toast Crunch extremely loudly.
Hard, just taking it down.
My God, that was a lot.
It'll get soggy,
well, if
you've
seen the commercial, those things attack and they like eat, so you got to eat them quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also wanted to mention that at least initially, all of the folks that Veronica and Reggie were selling to were all people who are tied in. There was a Mr. Mamet for David Mamet.
Yeah, there was
a Mr. Stone for Oliver Stone. And I think there were a couple of others, but I may have forgotten to write them down. What else? What else did you guys find that you wanted to call out?
Archie called Vegas his best friend, spitting in Jughead's face yet again.
Yeah. Oh, come on. I had that thought too.
You can have more than one best friend. You can say like one of my best friends is how he should.
He didn't. Worked. He said Vegas was my best friend. He didn't say my best dog friend. Maybe Jughead
probably,
was his best dog.
He probably meant
friend.
When he was a little kid, you know, before he kind of.
Jughead loses again. And did this episode feature the weirdest title drop in the entire series?
Where with the barking dogs?
With the, like, they get a dog and it's just a quiet moment and then the title flashes on the screen.
Well, did you hear though? The title flashes on the screen and then there were barking dogs behind the title. It was the Riverdale sting and it was going, very weird.
Maybe it's a clue.
It's very weird. The whole dog thing was real weird. I don't know. Pete, anything you wanted to call out before we move to some tweets and questions and theories?
Yeah, I really could have used a lot more of Tabitha and Betty on the old CB, kind of getting into it, having some fun, doing some like breaker 1-9 stuff, you know, but
That would have made a lot of sense.
We just got just a little bit, and it just felt like we really, really should have got more on that. That would have been
really
fun.
You should get a ham radio, Pete. You could do that all day.
Yeah, you would love that. They're mostly made out of ham.
Well, that's a common misconception. You may be surprised when you get it. You might be surprised when you get it, how little ham is actually involved.
Let's move on to some questions and theories and comments here. This is from Caitlin Reese, LOL. Veronica and Reggie definitely still have the chemistry, and it seems like they'll get together again, IMO. I think we disagreed 100%. On that, but I think we've
talked about it. But only one of us is right, and if you can see the relationship blossoming, come on. I'm like the matchmaker on this podcast.
Oh, boy.
Shameless30SRVD says, thoughts on the Barchi crumb, Archie Nightmare and Window of Light. We talked about that. Also, my theory for next week, we find out Jughead's trauma was about being stuck in a sewer with the rats, Rat King. He wrote about it at least a while on. Pick is what I got from his computer screen. I can read that here. I think this is, a couple of people wrote this down. This was the crazy novel that he wrote while he was high on maple mushrooms.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
And I haven't verified the accuracy of this, but this is what this person sent in. People blank me blank the truth. The Rat King isn't real. That you made him up. They think blank fell into the tunnels and was stuck for 4 days. They want me to believe that someone came looking for me, that blank without me, but they were wrong. I was next in line to the Rat King's blank, and the only person who believes me is the Mothman. I should follow the Mothman now out of the rat-infested sewers in the City of Nightmares into the glorious sky with my moth blank. All of a sudden, Betty said, you lost me forever and vanished before my eyes. I began to cry. I had to blank forward and leave the sewers for Betty. I kept going all the way to the end of the tunnel. Suddenly, I came upon a ladder. I stared at the ladder and then looked up and saw that a blank manhole cover way out of the tunnels. I could not stay in the tunnels any longer. It reminded me too much of Betty. So I climbed and climbed my way to the top. I emerged covered in filth. It was daytime. I could tell by looks from strangers that I did not blend into them with the regular citygoers. I blank in an alley and hid. And after a while, the blank found me. They took me blank. Oh, how awful it felt to be that lonely.
Wow.
And Jughead's hot dog agent is like, perfect. The New Yorker wants it.
All I needed was pages. Didn't say what needed to be on them.
That was very well read, Alex.
Thank you very much.
And truly, what?
It got better.
I do think we know that he got trapped in a tunnel, right? Like, there's something with a subway tunnel.
But I
bet
like
there's
the
something.
Fact
I bet
that
he's started to live under there. I bet he's going to encounter some sort of population. He creates some sort of Underdale in New York City, and where he can truly have space to write his stuff.
No. Do you think he did some sort of like Schenectady, New York type thing with cardboard, where he created a cardboard Riverdale and the White Worm and the sex bunker and everything?
Yeah, because once you're in the sewers, your sex bunker has to be super deep.
I like the idea of a sex bumper better. Mm-hmm. Sex bumper? I just got to set up some
gotta
sex bumpers.
You got to ask for that at the desk when you go bowling, otherwise they won't put it in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm horrible at sex, so I have to put in sex bumpers.
I got to put in some bumpers. It helps.
Fewer gutter bars, if you know what I'm saying.
No, I don't. I don't. I would like to say, though, that it makes me happy that when he was in the dark, he thought of Betty, because Dark Betty is, you know, we got to see more of it, and I'm excited.
Well, he also thought of tunnels, so interpret that how you want to.
Wow.
Zalvin, be better.
I think a lot of Jughead's trauma is, doing drugs. I think he sort of slipped out of society when he was in New York, was living under the ground, and he blames Betty for that a little bit, sort of pushing him off his axis. And I think he's going to deal with that, but I still would be surprised if they can turn that back into a relationship between Betty and Jughead.
I really hope that we get a little bit more of this episode at some point. Like, I would love it if it at the kind of the chainsaw moment we got to see, where maybe there was a bat. Like, he opened up his truck side panel and there was a bat. There was a knife, and then he was like, mm-hmm. "No, I'll go for the chainsaw."
Wait, what are you talking about here? We were just talking about Jughead.
He's shifting to something. I'm
completely shifting gears. I thought that changed.
Like a trucker. Like a trucker who's shifting gears.
Exactly. But Pete shifted from 18th gear to reverse without any break in between. Whenever we talk about Bughead not happening, Pete panics and starts talking about something different.
Let's move on then to at ANRV F4 says, what do you guys think Betty and Tabitha's next move is with the trucker they've kidnapped? And also, do you think it will link back to Jughead? Probably given that he left in a truck for New York is, I assume,
well,
the implication.
Hopefully they'll find Jughead in this like silo where they keep people from the road.
I think it's unrelated. I think Jughead got into another truck, and that's how he got back to New York. And this guy is
you
some
think Jughead
sort of
got in and out of the truck, no problem.
Yeah,
you got a free ride to New York.
Well, let me throw this one out to you because this is tied in. This is from @_RyanSchmid. Do you think the trucker Betty and Tabitha caught is the trucker who took Polly?
Ooh.
I'm going to say
I sort of do.
You do. Okay. Why do you think so?
Well, because he is a crazy murderer. Like, are they going to say this guy's an unrelated chainsaw dude?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that's out of the realm of possibility.
Trash bag killer.
But I do think I think that story is going to move forward a little bit because I do think that we probably want to see Polly again soon so we don't forget about it. There aren't that many episodes left this season, and I do think Betty, through this search for Polly and dealing with this crazy person, I think she has to face whatever happened to her and Trash Bag Killer, that whole situation, because I think she is throwing herself into danger to the point that she has to fix that situation.
Do you think she's on the highway to the danger zone? Is that what you just said?
Oh, that's pretty good. I could see a place where there's more of them, that it's not necessarily a cult, but like it's a ring of truckers who like murdering women, and he's just one of them. So maybe... he doesn't know anything about Polly, because I could see a place where next episode she's torturing this guy. She's torturing this guy. She's torturing. She goes too far and ultimately doesn't actually get the answer that she wants or doesn't get the closure
wants. What do you think about this, though? What if it's a switch where you think it's going to be Betty, but Tabitha goes too far?
Because
she's like, I gotta be like Betty. I gotta.
Let me throw something else at you that just sort of occurred to me while I was watching the episode. There's been a lot of theories online that honestly I think are kind of baseless about Betty being pregnant this season. I don't know what anybody is basing it on other than the fact that she eats a lot of stuff on the show. Like, she had some fries one episode, and she had a milkshake another, and she was eating smart food.
That's
I'm
bullshit.
Sure there's more evidence. I haven't really looked into it much. But
Brad Pitt gets to eat all over the place. Nobody says none. She has one fry, and you're going to be like, you're
exactly.
pregnant.
And it was covered That's in bullshit. Maple mushrooms, so everybody calm down. But what if the big move for Betty at the end of the season is not that she has a baby, but she gets arrested? What if she gets thrown in jail? Like, she legitimately goes too far with the trash bag killer or somebody. That's kind of what Glenn was saying to her this episode. And she ultimately ends up in a place where she is in prison.
Or I mean, I could she's see it. Running the FBI.
Yeah, one of the two.
Yeah.
Highs and lows. What do you think, for your theory about the ring of killers, how does that conversation get started when you...
Well, first you're at Coyote Ugly, and you're like, man, this is good, clean fun. Another person's like, yeah, but you know what would be fun is if we just grab people off the road and torture them for a while. Yeah, you're right.
Well, they already set up, what do they call the Craigslist on Riverdale? Like Craigslist or something like that? Whatever it is. Yeah, you post out there and you find some people. You go to a forum, find people who like the same things. Like, that's how I found the same people who really like watching the light go out of people's eyes in hospitals. Meet up with a couple of buddies. Stop. We go there.
Why would you call that back, you fucking creepy...
A lot of really powerful game moves from Alex's episode. Seeing people die and standing everything.
Why? You were the worst person.
Thank you so much.
I will say, Alex, you have been a light leaving people's eyes stand for a long time.
All right, we got a couple more here just to run through them. So this is from Track Arun Hipster Moose. That's it. Oh, there's actually a little bit more. Will Moose and Fags have anything to deal with Midge's death? Has Margaret Baduke Moose been in contact with Donna? my bigger question is, do you think we're ever going to see Moose again this season?
Exactly.
I think no. I'm going
to
say
no. I think they might, because they all want to try to be friends. I think we'll see Moose a little bit, and then it'll fade away, and then we're going to get Kevin and Fangs back together, because come on.
I don't know. I bet we will see Moose again. I don't think we're going to deal with any Moose continuity from back in the day.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I also think, I don't know if Fangs or Kevin are going to get back together. We know that.
What?
It seems like Fangs and Tony never are probably going to be co-parenting the baby. And I think Kevin's going to kind of be on his own path, would be my guess.
Yeah, but as long as he has a path, I think that's good. I think Absolutely. He needs to get up and out.
We got one last one here, and this isn't even about this episode, but I think it's worth discussing. This is from Walking Dane. Machen Amick said in an interview she will get a new love interest, I believe in season 6, one we know already. Any takes? Frank, Hiram, Sheriff Keller, or maybe Mr. Weatherby?
I would say it's Sheriff Keller or Jack Dunkel.
Yeah, I think it's Jack Dunkel, Frank.
I think so, too. I don't know about you guys, got very upset hearing that, because I think...
What?
Alice should be with FP, and otherwise but keep
he's,
herself...
He's gone. He's gone.
She can F-Palace have some fun until F-Palace comes back in. Come on.
Like, I mean, here's a clue. What's a reason why Frank and Alice would be spending time together? Like, is there any sort of relationship happening that might draw them together?
Oh, I see what you're getting at.
Because I don't know if you remember.
For their
I don't know if you remember
in the streets of Riverdale.
I don't remember, but one of the reasons why you saw a lot of FP and Alice is because Jughead and Betty were dating. And if you're trying to tell me that maybe we're going to see a lot of Frank and Alice. Sounds like we're going to see a lot of B-A-R-C-H-I-E, son.
Well, I'll throw this out at you.
Welcome to Fralis.
Oh, no.
What if instead we get the introduction of F.P. Jones' identical twin, G.Q. Jones?
Oh, wow. That's not very slim. Oh, that's a Stephen Urkel, Stefan Urkel situation?
100%.
Wow.
You stepped into that machine, came out super suave.
That would be amazing.
I think we got a jacked Uncle Fralis situation coming our way.
Yeah, I think if anything.
I'm really hoping what Salvin said happens, because that would just make me like really.
It's just
going to
make me
Rivendell.
Angry every time. I actually like Uncle Frank, but seeing them together, oh, it's going to make me so mad. All right, before we wrap up here, though, who was the MVP of this episode? Pete, let's go to you first.
This is tough. I mean, you want to say the chainsaw.
Say that every episode.
You want to say the chainsaw.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, you got to go with Betty, you know, just because
it's hard for you.
She was really phenomenal once again. And who can throw a wrench like that? Nobody ever. I mean, Nolan Ryan, maybe, but like that was that was unbelievable. That throw was unbelievable.
If anyone,
Chuck Norris. I don't even think I've seen Chuck Norris do anything like that. That was.
If anyone who listens to this podcast will know who Nolan Ryan is, please hashtag I know Nolan Ryan and respond to us. I'm going to give it up for Reggie and Veronica. Ooh, I thought that was the most.
That's two.
They're about to be one, kid.
No, that's two separate people, man.
No, not for long, because they're going to be getting together, I think.
That's
and I thought their scenes were very sweet.
Together like that.
It was very sweet. I thought it was fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I was going to give it up for Veronica because I really liked her in this episode. But since you already took her, I'll throw it out to Cheryl, I guess. Why not? I don't know. Yeah. I always like Cheryl, the ew. That's what did she say in terms of the wine and cheese? It was like, ew, that's reprehensible or something like that. Yeah. Very funny line.
She did have some great.
Had a lot of modes. She was in a ministry.
But making Kevin wear the red. I mean, come on.
It looks good on him. And she still let him wear a button-down shirt under a V-neck sweater, which is his classic look.
Classic Kev.
Let him. Come
on, so I appreciate man. She learned two musical numbers this episode. Okay? So
she's a pro.
She's a pro, exactly. If you would like to support us being pros, you can go to patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Riverdale. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen and follow the show. At Riverdale Dark on Twitter, at Riverdale After on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you after dark.
Rise up, all you light going away behind people's eyes stands. The king has arrived.
Oh, no.